Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Listen, you wanna
I wanna upgrade you.
I know, you keep saying You keep saying it, and we keep asking people for money at the end of the shows to help me upgrade, and then so they're gonna start asking questions soon. What's Brad doing with this money, you know?
They're like, Benny sounds good, he sounds better than the guests. What's the problem?
Yeah, what's going on? It's cause Brad had too many $8 Manhattan lattes or whatever happens there. Whatever you people do. That's right. I said you people.
I actually did have a coffee from a vendor outside of my home today.
Nice.
I had to go pick up a rental car, and so I got an iced coffee up there.
What are you, heading up to the country?
At some point. No definite plans. I just got a car for like the month.
Oh, really?
We're thinking about buying one.
Yeah, you were saying that a while ago. What's your dream car? Like, if you had no, say you had a New York City parking spot and whatever, and no, and money's not an option, what car do you get? Do you go vintage or new?
For like realistic, for the family, for me?
Give me one of each. Give me realistic and then give me like midlife crisis dream car kind of deal.
Realistic for the fam, probably like a midsize SUV, something sensible, or maybe okay. if money's not an option, maybe a three seater.
You're not going to go Escalade or something.
No, that's too big, dude. That's gross. That's gross. Maybe like a nice compact. I don't know. I drove a Subaru. What's the bigger one, but not the massive one? Not a Forester.
The Outback.
No, maybe it was a Forester. It was pretty comfy. Didn't have seats. I feel like as a New Yorker, my carbon footprint is so low that if I want to get a big car, it's okay.
Oh. Yeah, that works.
But
I guess, okay, and what's your dream?
My dream, I don't know, you've heard me talk about motorcycles. There was a point when I owned two beautiful motorcycles I got married.
Yeah. Sure.
I would love to have a new Moto Guzzi and... The balls.
What's that? That's like a race, bike.
No, more like a cruiser. Guzzis are kind of like they're big V twin engines. They're kind of the Italian version of like a Harley, but they're so much nicer. Because I'm not a Harley guy. I don't like Harleys. And Guzzis are obviously a little sportier.
Would you full on leather up?
Yeah, when I rode, I always wore leather. I was very safety conscious. I would wear boots pretty much all the time, and leather when I mean, obviously you can't always wear leather, dude. But if I was going on a long road trip, like on the highway, fuck yeah, I laid it down a few times, dude.
Did you?
Yeah,
I've
been
some bad
down
accidents?
On my ass. The worst was, the scariest was like, it was late. I was coming back from New England. This was on my little bike. I had an Interceptor, and like, right as you're coming across like 95, right the last exit before you cross over the GWB into Jersey.
Yeah,
it's the very last exit. It's a sharp right turn, and I came around that corner.
Yeah, it's to get onto the Hudson Highway.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there was a fucking oil patch.
Oh,
and I just
goodness.
The bike just went right out from under me, and like the bike was sliding, and like you know that like slow motion time, like
Yeah.
And I'm sliding on my back thinking, like, the instant that I stop moving, I have to jump up and get the fuck out of the way because somebody is going to come flying around that corner. There's no visibility right there because it's a sharp right, but there's, like, it goes around a building. And I was like, there's no – so I, like, I literally kind of leapt up while I was still sliding, and my bike was, like, sliding off the road.
Kept going.
And I get off to the side of the road, and immediately cars start coming, and nobody fucking stopped. And I
finally tore
off my helmet and held it up like a club. I'm like, stop your fucking car so I can get my bike. Because I, otherwise I would have got fucking run over, man.
Yeah, that's a crazy exit. Because that's the exit, too, where, like, people have been stuck on the Cross Bronx Expressway for, like, 4.5 hours or whatever just happened.
Right?
And then they get to the Hudson. They're like, let's go!
Dude, that's exactly... You know? I envisioned some motherfucker coming around that corner. And there was no way... And if I couldn't have stopped, like, because there was oil, like, they would have fucking... I could have been dead. That could have been it, Benny. That might have been my... That was
no
my
going off track. Where
that was my
I
one,
today?
Like, you know... I don't have nine lives. I have one, and that was it. I used it.
That was it? That was the one?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you made it.
Yeah, but I don't know if I could ride bikes anymore. Not with kids. I just feel like I owe more than that.
I'm at that point now where it's like if I bought or got on a bike now, like how many ways can you scream midlife fucking crisis?
what about me, dude?
No, you had one. You have like a history. It's like like if I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to start doing this thing I used to be into doing, but... If you've never ridden a bike in your life,
it'd be like me getting tattoos now.
Yeah, it's like, come on, the ship has sailed. It's like it's like me starting to do like cocaine now. You know, like you, certain things, you just you know, let it go. You just let it go. I might do very heavy drugs as an old man.
That's the fantasy, right?
Yeah,
become
like
a
90-year-old Alan Arkin.
Junkie.
Yeah, yeah, like Alan Arkin and Little Miss Sunshine. Just you know, keep it together during the day, but once the door closes at night. Ah, fuck it. I'm going to do heroin and watch some weird movies.
Fuck yeah, dude.
That's great.
That's my retirement plan.
Yeah. Well, that's positive. So we just had a great interview with Laura Stevenson.
Oh, so good.
Who I didn't say in the interview, but Laura, I truly revere as an artist. I think she's awesome.
Yeah.
And I think she's like, I hear some of the artists these days... You know, a few years ago, like Lana Del Rey and like, you know, Phoebe Bridgers, who's great. I think she's great, you know, just getting so much love. And I'm like, yo, Laura's got all these records and she's been here doing this kind of before all of you, you know? but she's in that wheelhouse though, where like, I think her records, especially her last record, are just so good that, you know, great songs last and they're going to stick around. And I think, she has nothing but a upward trajectory going for her for the rest of however long she decides to play music. If we ever play music again, the great caveat.
It's going to happen, but, man. Yeah. It'll happen.
But yeah, I was so happy to have her on. She's such a delight to be around. Like one of the funnier people I've ever toured with. She'll just lay it on you. You're just cracking up. I mean, honestly, you know, I'm one of those guys who, you know, in a quiet room, it's my instinct to like say something funny or like to just improve the feeling of the room. Touring with Antarctica Vespucci, with Jeff Rosenstock, Chris Farron, and her, and John even, is like, I've never gotten to just like sit back and just be like, oh, this is hilarious all the time. And I don't have to do anything. Right. Like, I've never just gotten to be like, a spectator to hilarity like that. And it was such a delight. Like you get in the van every day and just wait for the,
I can only imagine the three of them together, man.
Really fucking funny, man. But yeah, this was a fun interview and great skill to her to manage to secretly breastfeed on us for like 15 minutes without us even knowing.
That was so cool.
She's a new mom, and she's already real sly about it. Good for her. So I guess that's a game that anybody listening can play. Try to find the point in the interview in which Laura starts breastfeeding. I bet you can't.
I don't.
Bet
I
you
didn't
can't.
Notice.
She's smooth.
I did
she's
not
smooth.
Notice.
And we got four kids between the two of us. We've seen this. That's awesome. That was so much fun. Let's get into it.
Let's do it. It's going on track!
that's like really where it stops for me. I'm like, oh, okay, my computer doesn't like it. Now I don't know what to do.
End of the road. Unless there's like a tutorial video on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Actually, that's even a little too far, probably. I don't even know if I would do that much.
I gotta get Benny a headset mic. He moves around too much. He's a drummer. He doesn't get a chance to move around. So
he's got all that kinetic drummer energy.
Yeah. Oh fuck! Is this gonna start some cool guitar player drummer bashing?
There can never be too much of it, Benny.
It never ends.
We've suffered too long.
Wait. Who's suffered?
The guitar players.
What
under
have
the
you
dictatorship? The dictatorship of the good drummer.
Yeah, you're calling all the shots. What's the tempo? I don't know. It's up to you.
I've been staring at you people's butts, having you make me deaf for the last like 25 years. Listening. Do you know how many noodles I've heard in my life? Like someone just playing around with like a new pedal or a new amp or a new part. Like, I'd say about 90% of the guitar I've heard in my life, which is a lot of guitar, wasn't even a part, wasn't even a song. It's just you people being hyper-obsessed with making weird noises. It's like you're not in My Bloody Valentine, all of you, you know? Just play a fucking chord.
So is that why most drummers don't listen to what's being played? Because they don't want to hear noodling?
Listen, we've had this conversation a lot. I'm not going to sit here and say all drummers are musicians. They're not. Some guys are bangers. Some ladies are bangers. They just hit stuff. They hit it in time. And they don't really understand the rest of the concept going on. I know those people exist. But I'm not gonna speak for them. Because you know I'm not one of them.
I know you're not. Sorry, Benny.
Great way to get me started here, Brad.
I like to get you warmed up, baby.
Blood pressure's through the roof.
Yeah. Now I'm angry. I just threw that blue Yeti. That didn't work. All right. It's gone.
Walk it off.
Hey, Laura.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Feel pretty good. Got some sleep last night. Slept probably like 7 hours.
Whoa, that's intense. Yeah. So I usually start this off by just being like, hey, you know, like, how's your quarantine been? But you've had a particularly interesting quarantine. So how old was your newborn when like the shit hit the fan?
I was about a week before I gave birth when the shit really started to hit the fan. So yeah, when I was in the hospital, we were in like a birth center that was adjacent to a hospital. So like we were still like fucking terrified. And every cart that came through the door, I was like, was that in the main hospital?
Right.
Like the anesthesiologist worked in the hospital that came in and gave me an epidural, even though I like loved him afterwards. But like before it, I was really afraid. But like, so yeah, we were about a couple weeks from my due date when we were like talking about inducing labor, because I knew that all this shit was like brewing, and I was like, the sooner we get this baby out, like the better we can get her home. And they were like really trying to talk me out of it, and they were like, just let the baby come when the baby comes. But she wouldn't have come for another probably like 3 weeks had we waited, and then it could have even been scarier. So I induced labor. And we had to decide if it was like better to wait, because then you're maybe in the hospital for a way shorter period of time. Like if you let the baby come naturally, you can labor at home.
Sure.
And I had hired a doula. Is this boring?
No.
Okay.
Not for us. No, maybe for the audience, but Benny and I are right there with you, man.
I'll try to add some rock and roll to
this. No, this is way better than most people have been starting. It's like, yeah, I'm just kind of sitting at home, and I like wake up late, and I'm like kind of bored and sad. Like that's been most people. So no, this is far more interesting.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So we hired this doula, and I was like so excited to just like have, you know, as close to, you know, the birth that I wanted or was planning for. Which
so what
was
your
like,
birth plan? A natural birth?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I wanted to do unmedicated, and I wanted to labor at home, but I still wanted to go to the birth center, and like I had a bunch of midwives that I had met that were part of like the provider that was covering us that worked at the birth center. So like it seemed like it was going to go great. And then, like, as things were getting closer, you know, Mike and I were talking about, like, inducing and, you know, weighing the odds, because if you were to just go natural, then yeah, you're going to be in the hospital for like maybe 24 hours if you play it really right. But then, you know, as time was going on, it was like, okay, but then that's going to be happening and there's going to be more cases and there's going to be more sick people in the hospital and like blah, blah, blah. But then also if you induce, it could take a really fucking long time. And then, you know, you might end up needing a C-section, which would require 3 extra days in the birth center. So like I could have been there for a week.
Yeah.
So that was like fucked up. So we were just like, okay, let's just get the baby out now. And we decided to, and it ended up being awesome because they gave me like, they give you this thing called Cervidil. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's like, it's supposed to like get your cervix ready before they give you the Pitocin to like actually start the contractions. Okay. And after they gave me the Cervidil, my water broke. And then like 24 hours later we had the baby.
Oh, so perfect. So
it was sick.
Maybe they were ready. They were ready anyway.
Yeah. She was ready to come out.
So what week did you actually deliver at?
It was the 22nd of March.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
So when you were in the hospital, the birthing center, like, did you guys have to be masked? Did Mike have to be masked? Was he even allowed, like, in the room? Like, I'm sure what was going on at the time in the hospital?
Well, so it was, like, right before they were only allowing the mothers to be there.
Oh, okay.
You were still allowed to have one birth partner, so we couldn't have our doula. But I called her like when my epidural started like pooling on one side of my body, and I was like, I could feel my entire right side of my body and like the contractions are getting really close and I feel like the baby's going to come soon. I'm so scared. She was like, have them flip you. You know, like she was like walking me through it over the phone.
Yeah.
So like, and then that was great because then I was like completely numb and the baby came out after like 10 pushes. So it was like really fucking sick. Yeah. It was awesome. We were allowed to be there. You didn't have to wear a mask yet. We did get our temperature taken when we walked through the door.
Okay.
And we had like a briefing they had called us before and they asked us, you know, all these questions about like traveling out of the country, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, it seemed like it was in such early stages of them figuring out the protocol, you know?
Right.
And like the one midwife who I had like had a bunch of appointments with previous to the birth, who I was like really psyched about working with, who was actually planning to deliver me, she had a mask on and we were like, uh-oh, what's going on? And then at around 2 a.m. she went home. So she was sick, but probably not with COVID because they probably would have told me. But so then we were like all freaked out because she had been just like checking on me, you know, like,
yeah,
and then they like, they go and they take like a nap or whatever. And like, I guess during her like nap time, she was like, I'm too sick to be working.
Oh, that's,
and so they sent her home. So we were like,
an extra layer of scary. Yeah.
Yeah. We were all fucking freaked out about that. But as we were leaving the birth center, they were like, you know what? You're probably the last couple that will have been able to be together because we're going to institute the single parent birthing.
So good call, Your instincts were right on with inducing and trying to stay ahead of that.
Yeah, it really kind of opened me up to like feeling like there was some sort of thing greater than myself that was keeping us safe during all of this. I got like super like, I think it might have been the hormones, but I got like super spiritual afterwards. I was just like, there's something out there that was like protecting us.
Yeah.
Because I just felt like we were so lucky, even though we were so fucking scared, because it was still also just like, everywhere you went, like I just kept saying it was like Beetlejuice, you know, where you're like, when you leave the house, there's the sandworms, you know?
Yeah,
so like,
that's what
we felt like. Cause we were like, everybody has it. Do we have it? Like when we walked through the door with the baby in the carrier, we were just like, okay, take all your clothes off, you know, like, and we just like, we're flipping out.
try to create that safe barrier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did a really good job at the birth center. And, you know, I think that I haven't heard any stories of, you know, somebody getting sick there. I don't know. So I think that they're really cautious, but it just was in that early stage where you're just like, everybody has it. Nobody knows what to do.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, like, so it was scary.
Well, and then I can imagine you continued to be, I mean, because coming home with a newborn, you know, people don't realize sometimes, I mean, it's one of the most terrifying things ever.
Yeah.
Maybe the most terrifying thing ever. Because it's like, yeah, like everything in life comes with like, you know, some rules, some standards, mm-hmm. some things you're supposed to do. And I found it amazing, too, in a hospital. They're just like, all right, here's your baby.
Yeah.
Go on. Go on. And yeah. Enjoy your life. I'm like, whoa, what do I do?
Where's the manual?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
seriously.
So you get in the house, you burn all your clothes you're wearing, and you create the barrier on the front door. Like, how did the next, like, month pan out? Like, I'm sure you guys were, like hardcore quarantining, huh?
Oh, yeah. We didn't go anywhere. We were, like, bleaching all the mail, like, several days after it had arrived.
Right, okay.
So, like, we would leave, like, a window of time for, like, anything to, like, evaporate, and then we would bleach it, and then we would wait, and then we would bring it into the house. So,
wow.
There was, like, so yeah, I mean, we were, like, out of our fucking minds because, you know, she had no immune system for the first 2 months.
Yes.
So, you know, and we had to go to the doctor's office
right.
3 days after she was born.
Right, right.
And I was like, why are we doing this?
Yeah,
like,
why are
we just got into our safe place, and now all of a sudden we're having to, like, go into a medical building.
Yeah.
It's like, and, like, have her be handled and touched, and she's breathing air with maybe sick people. It was, like, so fucking scary.
Sure.
So that was awful. And then I was having a really hard time getting breastfeeding started because the
right.
baby has a lot of, like, issues with her mouth. But I, in my, like, it's such a haze now because I was so hormonal and so sleep deprived. And
of
I
course.
Also, like, was, like, recovering physically from, like, giving
yeah,
birth.
Of course.
And so I was just, like, so determined to get breastfeeding going because I felt like, I felt so guilty bringing her into the world, and I felt like the only thing I could do for her was to, like, give her breast milk to, like, sustain her and get her immune system started.
Sure.
Because I wanted to just, like, protect her, and
yeah.
I was, like, so devastated that it wasn't working.
But we
got it together, but it took a really long time, and we ended up having a lactation consultant come to the house.
Okay.
Which was really scary.
Right. Like another dirty stranger entering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like terrifying. She was wearing a mask and she had like a 90-year-old mother. So she was in very, very tight quarantine.
Okay.
And she came and it was just like, she was the only person that we had seen and the only person that had darkened our doorway since we brought this baby home. And I was just like, weeping the whole time because I so needed, you know, the support of
sure.
like a wise older woman
yeah,
in my life,
yeah.
you know what I mean? So I was just like crying and she was like, okay, we're gonna get this under control.
Yeah.
So it was like therapeutic and also she really helped me because the baby's mouth was just like all sorts of fucked up.
So after that she started latching and you're on a good breastfeeding routine now? Or?
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, we have days where it's like, it dips, you know, like
yeah,
2 days
yeah.
ago, I was like, I don't have milk anymore. And
sure.
Mike was like, you still have milk. You're okay. And I was like, no. And then I spent the whole day like doing something called power pumping where you're like
yeah.
doing like 20 minutes on and 10 minutes off.
I know
and 10
all
minutes
about
on.
It. Yeah.
It fucking sucks and like hurts. And,
yeah.
But then like, it's fine now. So I think that I'm just so in my head about it that every backslide feels like the end of the world, but then
sure.
it's like, it corrects itself and it's okay.
Yeah.
But Laura,
but yeah.
this is your first kid, right?
Yeah.
So just so you know, we went through almost everything that you're talking about, minus the
oh,
COVID,
wow.
and I thought it was completely terrifying. So adding in
yeah.
that additional anxiety, I can't even imagine.
yeah. It's like that also, and like, just being isolated and not having my mom and my sister, you know,
yeah,
like come
right.
and be
yeah.
with me and like meet the baby. They just came actually last week and met the
oh
baby for the first time.
Wow.
So she's 3 months now. And my mom flew up from Florida to Alexandria, Virginia, where my sister lives. And she quarantined there for 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
And then they drove up and they didn't stop. They stopped to pee on the side of the road.
Nice. Hardcore.
So I'm sure they'll be very happy that I just told the world. because, you know, like public bathrooms on 95, you know, that's a main artery. Yeah,
you're
know,
not going, like, to find me at the Chesapeake House right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's like one of my favorites.
Great Sbarro's. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. The Maryland House is also very good. Yeah, and there's that good one in Delaware that's like fucking sick now.
Yeah, that new one. That's like,
oh my
it's
God,
epic. I know.
It's gorgeous.
But have you ever made the mistake of skipping Maryland House and going to the one like really close to downtown Baltimore?
Oh, is it shitty?
Oh, it's rough.
Oh.
Even an A&W, I wouldn't eat at, you know? No point over there.
I guess I would just wait till the Delaware one, because that one, even though it's very crowded and the bathrooms are just like, I mean, the bathrooms are beautiful, but they're just so fucking crowded. So I think now it would just be like a nightmare. I don't know. I haven't gone anywhere. I went on like 4 walks.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That's it. So,
well, I mean, that's a strange yeah part of it, right? Is like, I mean, even for a normal young couple, you know, I don't think people realize how kind of isolating the newborn experience is when you're literally just in your own world with you and your partner and your baby. And it could become a very, like, lonely place, you know, even though you're doing something so functional and biologically important. There's all these other aspects of life you're used to that just totally go out the window anyway.
Yeah.
So when you add that with the fact that you literally are not allowed to see anybody and yeah not have the support you need, yeah, that's crazy. It's being, like, left out on an island.
Yeah, and it sucks because, like, you're going through it, but, like, everyone's going through it. So, like, right, even if you need to lean on people, like, they need to lean on you or, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, like, it feels like I can't complain as much as I want to because everybody's going through, like, the same shit and, like, harder shit because, like, they may have toddlers who and they have to work from home at the same time. You know, like, that shit's, like, I can't even imagine how hard that is, you know?
Well, people just need to use caging more. So I've been yeah doing it at my house. They get used to it pretty quickly. I don't know. You know, everyone's just trying to be cool about it. And it's like, listen, there's a pandemic. We got to get serious, you know?
Yeah.
Like, break out the old dog cages. We're good.
We got a crate.
I have some tricks. You know, my wife, super hardcore breastfeeding between my two kids. She's essentially had someone on her chest for like 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the beginning, you know, my son was premature and we had, right, you know, some issues bringing him home. So I do have some tricks for milk supply.
Okay.
I have a great lactation cookie recipe using brewer's yeast and a couple other things.
They're I've got brewer's yeast.
And caraway seeds. It's not the best thing in the world, but it helps. And then, you know, my wife found it really beneficial to have like half of a stout or a very dark beer.
Yeah.
She found that worked a little bit as well. And
cool,
then,
yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, like and then there's the thing they forget. You're like, you know, you're looking at a human. Like, this is a little tiny human. And some days, like, they're just not that hungry.
Right.
You know? So some days it's not you, it's them. You know,
I know that's so hard to remember. Like, they could just be going through some shit, you know, like,
yeah,
and
just rough
it's not
day.
Like, yeah, it's not like you're a failure or like somehow biologically, like all of a sudden you're just like all fucked up, you know, like
no.
it's hard to remind yourself that, you know, that kids are just weird.
I want to touch back to the one thing you said, like, you know, in my experience, and it connected with me because in my experience, I had a very strangely spiritual, like 48 hours around it, where I find myself holding court with like all four of my grandparents, and you know, like doing like some like, what was your experience? Like, what were there family members, you know, old family members like reaching out to you? What was your spiritual experience with that?
Not so much. Well, maybe, I don't know. I kept having a lot of dreams about my grandma, but like, you know, I was thinking about her a lot because her name's Margaret and my mother's Margaret and my sister's Margaret. And so like, if me or my sister were going to have a kid that was a girl, like we have to name her Margaret, but then
sure.
I wanted to like leave it open for my sister to have another kid if she wanted to have a girl, like
right.
then name her Margaret.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know what to do here. So we gave her the middle name Mairead, which is Irish for Margaret. and the baby was conceived in Ireland. TMI. So I thought that was like a fun little, like, you know, like, oh, she's Irish Margaret, but it's not like exactly Margaret. But sure. Yeah, like I definitely had a lot of dreams about my grandma, now that you mention it. But I think it was more like I felt like there was a lot less randomness. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like something was taking care of us in that, right. Like, because my mom is like super Christian and like super duper religious. And she's always like, you're gonna, you know, like, you gotta just leave it up to God. You know, she always says that about things. And I'm like, no, I'm asking you for advice.
Yeah,
like,
right. Real world advice.
Like,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I'm like, Mom, what would you do? And she's like, just ask God what to do. And I'm like, no.
Yeah,
like,
that doesn't work for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I've been agnostic since I was a child. Like, please, you know, like, but, all of a sudden, like, it came to me, and it could have just been like myself or I don't know, but like, it came to me that the decision, you know, to induce, like, I just like woke up in the middle of the night and I was like, Mike, we should induce. And he was like, okay. Huh. And then I called the next day, we got the appointment, and like everything went the way that it went.
Right.
And I felt like, I don't know, I just felt like there was some sort of like intervention there, like, or something. I'm just like more open to the idea of like, I'm just more open to the idea of there being something else now that all of a sudden, you know, but like, I'm not, I'm still like, you know, I'm still skeptical about everything.
Sure.
In the world. But it just, it felt like, it just felt special. I don't know, in a way that I can't really explain.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Well, you know, I mean, there's one thing that I think that we learned was, and it was learned it the hard way, was that, like, your instincts are usually always right with this stuff. You know, we talk about having the baby manual or having other people around, the village, which we don't have anymore. But, like, almost every case when my wife and I were, like, with our first, of course, like, had a strong feeling about something, and even when somebody else maybe who kind of might know more was telling us something else, pretty much our instincts were always correct. There's some magic there, man. So
yeah
trust your instincts.
You gotta trust biological mama instincts. Whenever my wife has one of those like feelings, I'm like, okay, that's coming from a place like I couldn't even begin to understand.
Right.
And I got to run with it because that's like something bigger than me. I had a similar experience where I couldn't pinpoint it, but the process of watching kids grow and having kids and now watching them grow, you know, up instead of over, I suppose. it's like it does. Maybe it's like the powerlessness of it, you know, where you really do have to succumb to like whatever nature is doing. You know, it's like, and there is such like a complex like biology behind it that it kind of makes you feel small, you know, and makes you maybe, I don't know. It definitely made me see things in a way where I'm like, this shit is really complicated and I will never understand it. And maybe like the idea that the answer to all this is way bigger than me seems a lot more tangible than it did prior.
Right. No, absolutely. No, I totally agree. And I think, I guess I just have to chalk it up to instincts. At this point, everything feels like, you know, it's not in it. I'm not making the decision myself, you know, like I haven't like, I guess I haven't owned it as like my maternal instinct because I'm so new at it.
Right.
That everything I'm just like, I don't know, maybe there's a God and we're okay now. Like, I don't know. But like, maybe I have a maternal instinct. I didn't even realize it until you just said it.
It sends you on a journey. Like all of a sudden, like my sister's kids are, you know, getting into like teenage age and stuff. And I'm like, wait, when did you become Jewish? You know, like all of a sudden she's got like Passover at her house, stuff like this. And I think that stuff like, you know, maybe comes back too, just for this sense of like family and history and not as much like belief.
Right.
Like you said, if your mom is a devout Christian, she has been your whole life. There's a part of you that's just comfortable with some of that logic, like whether you can intellectualize it out of yourself or not, it's still like, you know, it's the beginning thread. So I think when you have kids, you start to really lean to the things that are just comfortable to you. you know?
Right.
And that's comfortable. Yeah. And it's nice. You know what I mean? There's so many times I wake up and I'm like, man, I wish this was just all out of my power because, like, it's really stressful.
Yeah.
Like, if every one of these decisions is me having the power over the situation and dictating it, that's a lot of responsibility. It's scary.
I know. And, like, I hate to believe that there's just no answer and like everything's random and we're just nothing happens when you die. But like then that's like, that keeps me up at night still. But like, it's, I am jealous of people that feel comforted by,
me too,
you know, like some sort of faith. Yeah. But I do, I definitely like, I don't know. It's, I just feel, I feel a little bit differently now that we had that whole experience. Like I feel a little bit more like open a possibility, which is nice. I don't know if that's the beginning of something or if it's just a blip in my experience.
Who knows? It'll grow.
Yeah.
I even found myself the other day, you know, my son's getting to an age where he's starting to ask the questions, fundamentally understand that things die. You know, and we never really came up with like, this is our plan for how we're going to deal with this. Cause I'm a failed Jew. My wife is a failed Christian. We don't really know much about either. So it's like, you know, it's just not a very worked out point of view. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that was important to me is what you said, is that I don't want to eliminate the possibility of faith if they want it. Because it's so nice for people and it's so comforting for people that, you know, I don't want to intellectualize faith out of my children. I want them to actually be able to make that decision. So my son's asked me some stuff and I'm like, yeah, it was God. God did it. You know, I've never said that to anyone in my life, that God was part of the creation process and that's how he came to be. But you know what? He's 4 years old. He doesn't really understand Darwinism.
Right.
I can't really like lay that out for him yet.
Big bang is. Yeah, exactly. Antimatter is. Like,
you know, he calls meteors meat eaters. You know, like, how am I supposed to do this?
You should never change that. Never let him change that. That's so fucking cute.
So, yeah, I tell that to say, like, I've gone through the same thing a little with, like, you know, I'm not exactly, like, filled with faith, but I'm definitely filled with more questions than I had, like, prior to this, and more doors and avenues seem open than they did before that.
Yeah.
Cool. So since you and Mike play music together, do you have any plans to have like a touring baby or a touring family once things settle down in the world?
I mean, yeah, we did. right. But like I had a plan to go and do a festival in Norway in August. And that was like the thing that was, I mean, obviously that's been pushed, you know, I don't know even how far, probably at least a year into the future. But so that was my first thing that I was going to be back on the road for. And so like in the beginning, I was still like making my like milk stash hoard, you know, for that. Right. And yeah, like, and so like that was going to just be probably 5 days, which would have been really fucking hard. So I'm glad I'm not going, because I can't imagine in like less than 2 months leaving my child and going to Europe for 5 days. Like that's like hard. I can't. But before I had her, I was like, we could do it. but like, I think for US touring, if it's like a fly out thing, I would just do a short little like maybe long weekend and then come home. But if it's East Coast or like Midwest touring, we were talking about going together and maybe having maybe Mike's mom come or bringing another friend to watch the baby, you know, while we're playing, maybe like stay at the hotel with the baby while we're playing. And then, so like we would have a road baby if it made sense. I mean, but like now that's like all just like speaking in, you know, this like grand terms. I think like we're not really understanding the intricacies of it and how like difficult it could be.
Right.
I just think like, oh, little headphones. You know what I mean? Like, cute. Like we she could just like hang out in the green room, like, but like, you know, life is so much harder than that. But that was like our plan.
Right. So So you just
before
thought,
music died.
Yeah, right. Before everything we knew and loved just died right in front of our face. Yeah. Yeah, that was cool. But I think it's awesome that you could have a traveling band. And you and Mike have been working together a long time at this point, right? Like, because he was in the Cans the whole time. Mm-hmm. And even prior to that.
Yeah.
Was the Cans the first time you guys played together?
Yeah. I think our first show together was at a place called Rockstar Bar in Brooklyn. It was like right on Kent, I think.
Yeah. Vaguely remember that.
It had like these like mermaid, like, like bow, like sculptures as like in like over the bar. And they were like all like drawn on. It was a really weird place, but that was our first like show after. I guess it was like our first show after we had our first kiss.
Aww.
We might have had like two shows before that, maybe at like Lulu's or something. But
So the relationship really like kind of burgeoned at the beginning of the Cans, like that.
Yeah. Well, like, so I was playing with a couple different people before Mike was playing with me, but like when Mike was playing with me, it was more organized and like the shows were like at better places and not just like a shitty place on Long Island where like one of my weird friends is like playing, you know, like acoustic guitar along with me or whatever.
Right, right.
But yeah, I remember at that Rockstar Bar show, we hadn't told anybody that we were like playing with that, like we were like kind of getting together. Cause I remember like sneaking a kiss. Like we like had to like look around and be like, was anybody around?
And then, yeah.
Like,
right.
But yeah, so it was like, it was exciting, but I mean, there was probably like 2 weeks between like when we started playing together and then when we started actually like being romantic.
Oh, that's cool. I never realized the mystical romance of the Cans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, now that you've been at it for a long time and you subsequently got married and had a child, which means I assume you guys figured out how to do it.
Yeah, we're committed.
Yeah, so you know, this is something that doesn't work out for a lot of people. So what are some do's and don'ts about, you know, being in a band with your partner and working with your partner that can keep it cool?
Oh, do's and don'ts. Okay. Cause I do a lot of the don'ts. and then like, then we'll get in like a fight. And then like, it'll be fine. Cause usually I just like, I take things really personally, especially if it comes from him.
Right, sure.
Just cause that's, you know, your partner. So like, if they're saying anything that's like, you know, constructive criticism, it just feels like so much more intense. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And because he's like, he's been in it for such a long time and he is such like a, I mean, he's more important than I am. I feel like in so many ways to like this band. Cause like he just does so much on like the managerial end. And like, he just makes everything happen. You know, I just write those songs, you know, like,
Laura, I got to stop you right there. Come on. Listen, as a drummer, I know this as well as anyone. We all need you.
Right.
You got to remember that. None of us do anything without the songs. We need the damn songs.
I know. Songs are important. The songs are important.
You know,
I'm
give
important.
Yourself a little credit here,
yeah.
Laura. Okay,
I'm
moving
important.
On.
But he, like, if he wasn't in the band, I probably wouldn't. I mean, because he's, like, motivated and, like, thinks about stuff. And I just kind of, like, want to write songs and be like, isn't that enough?
Yeah, right.
And so, like, when he will, like, you know, suggest something that's, like, slightly more professional than, like, the way that I would do it, which, you know, like, in hindsight, the way I would do it might be the wrong way.
Right.
I will, like, you know, I used to, I don't think as much anymore, but I would like take it super personally and get really defensive. And then like all of a sudden we'd be like in an argument and it's like, no. And like with any other band member, it wouldn't happen that way. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right,
so
right,
I think
right.
like you really need to check yourself and be like, this is not a relationship argument. This is like a pragmatic band argument
right.
that is, you know, like two different opinions. It's not like there's nothing more than what's going on here. You know what
gotcha.
I mean?
Yeah,
and I think
yeah.
that's the ultimate don't. And I am getting better at that.
So it's really like just separating, basically being able to take criticism without taking it like personally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, yeah, separating how you feel like domestically from like how you feel just sure. like band wise. And it's hard because like
yeah,
you're living together. Yeah. yeah. You're living together on the road, you know, things come up. And it's really difficult to like put that aside. Also, like you have to remember to like be sweet with each other and like take time to right. like, you know, go and eat just the two of you, you know,
yeah,
like
right, right.
maybe like once a week or whatever, just like have a little bit of time to just like check back in, because otherwise you're just like buds, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
until
right.
you get home Tour and then you're like, oh
yeah.
shit. Yeah, exactly. And then
oh,
you
yeah,
get home
I live
and you're
with
like,
you. Yeah.
right. Oh, yeah. we love each other. We hold hands and kiss. Like, it's just weird. But
yeah, not just about loadout.
It's exactly. Like, yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's easy to just, you know, like put blinders on and be in like tour mode. But
sure,
you have
sure.
to you also nurture that aspect of the relationship. So I'd say like those are the two hardest things. That, but I mean, that's like any relationship is work. So you're just working on the road. You're working while you're working, you know?
Well, you guys are doing good.
Thank you. Yeah, we figured it out. It was, I definitely like, I don't have the most healthy understanding of like what a relationship is, just because I grew up in a broken home. And so like, I just like, you know, like it took me a lot longer to figure out a healthy dynamic, you know?
Sure.
But, you know, 13 years in, we're going strong.
Well, it sounds too that Mike is kind of a really cool, like a motivating factor for you. Cause I mean, I even read in an older interview that you had said, you know, when you were trying to go solo at first, you were sort of just kind of like writing songs just to write them and were reticent to, you know, record properly and put them out. And is it, was Mike kind of a fire starter to get you to take like that next step?
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. like he was like, you should make a record. And I was like, why? Why would I do that? That sounds like, I don't know. I felt like people that made records were like, I just felt like you couldn't just make a record. Like it was like a big, like I'm a career musician. You know, like, it just seemed like something.
You thought it was like egotistical or something.
Kind of. Or just like, it was like more of a statement than like just a collection of songs and documenting them. So,
right.
And he was like, no, I mean, you could just make a record. It's fine. And then, you know, he just has like more direction. And, so it was really nice for him to kind of like, you know, give me a push, cause he believed in me. And I guess also a lot of it is like, I don't believe in myself as much as he believes in me, which is, you know, nice. And I should try to learn how to believe in myself a little bit more, so he doesn't have to do so much of the heavy.
Well, maybe that ship has sailed, Laura.
Yeah, no. I know. Damn it, you're right.
So when you were first, like, about to make the switch to go solo from bands, were you sitting on tons of music? Did you have a lot of stuff you'd been working on in private? Or did the actual idea that you're gonna start doing this on your own start necessitating creation more?
I think that, well, I was definitely sitting on a lot of songs. And then I think I was inspired by, you know, these people in my life that had, that believed in me. I think right. that also like pushed me, like, cause like Mike and then like obviously Jeff,
sure.
Were such like champions of like what I was making, that I think that like pushed me creatively as well, just to like try more and like, right. feel like freer to do that. So I think it would be like a little bit of both, but I definitely had like a large pile of songs, a lot of them bad, that hopefully will never surface. And then I could kind of sifted through that and like found the good stuff. And then like, you know, I was learning so much that I was also like, you know, just trying to push myself to write even better songs. And I felt supported.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Had you already found like your singing voice? Like, is that something? No. Okay. So how did that,
because
I know you came straight out of a pretty like, you know, pretty much like a punk ska sort of world. And then, you know, went into this. Like, so what was that like? Like, you know, did you sing a lot as a kid? And how did it eventually manifest into, you know, singing for yourself in like a solo career like that?
I definitely sang a lot as a kid. I was always in choirs and stuff. Okay. I was like an a cappella kid in high school, which became cool, but was not cool when I was doing it.
Are there photos of you doing a cappella group stuff?
I'm sure. I don't know if we have any. There must be. There's a photo of me. I remember we did Fauré's Requiem. Like a bunch of high schools did it at Lincoln Center, which was really cool. Yeah. So I remember that we have a picture of because my mom went to that. But I don't know if there must be something in my yearbook of something of me wearing a cummerbund and a bow tie.
Maybe turtleneck or something.
Yeah. Oh, we were purely cummerbund, and then like the other two choral groups that I was in wore robes, which was also not cool. yeah, the choraliers and then the madrigal singers, which was very dorky.
My only frame of reference is Sister Act.
Oh yes, it was like before they threw off the robes, you know, like okay. We didn't have cool clothes underneath, we just had the robes.
we all need a whoopee.
Yeah, exactly. I wish that would be awesome. But yeah, so I did a lot of just like choral singing, and that was like fulfilling enough to me. And then like at home I would just be like singing and like singing along to bands that I liked, doing harmonies, you know, listening to CDs in my room. And then also like I loved musicals. So my sister and I would always do like, we'd sing like songs from Rent and Les Mis and stuff. And I would always have to be like the guy if it was like a duet, but that's fine.
you had more of the bass?
No, I think that I'm just, you know, the younger kid, so I get the shit luck. You know? Always Luigi, always the fucking guy. But whatever. At least I'm allowed to play, so it's fine.
Right, yeah. Give me any character.
I'll take what I can get. Yeah. But yeah, so then when I started singing like and writing, I definitely was like singing in a voice that was not my own. And like my first couple records, I'm still like transitioning to figuring out like what my voice was.
Oh, wow. Because
I definitely was like singing. I was trying to sing like my grandma, and she had this like really beautiful voice, but she sang on records in the 30s.
Right.
And just singing was different. And I just thought that that was pretty. And I was trying to sing with like a pretty voice. And I definitely was like not singing with my real voice. So like when I listened to like my first three records, I'm like, who is this? I started figuring out my voice like on Cocksure, which was my fourth record. And then I feel like on The Big Freeze, that's when I'm like, actually there's nothing that I'm singing through. I'm not singing like through a fence, you know, like I'm going straight from my brain out my mouth and it feels natural.
That's cool.
But it took me a really long time to figure that out and to be comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Cause like, it's not going to be as pretty as you want it to be, you know, and you just have to let it be what it is. And I definitely was singing inappropriately also. So I was really damaging my voice.
Oh,
and
I've
damaged my voice. I have polyps. I have bilateral polyps now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So how were you singing inappropriately? Like what was causing that?
I was like squeezing the notes out instead of like opening my throat. I was just like, because it was so like affected sounding, like I was trying to get this like tone in my voice that I was just really not singing in a healthy way. Also, I'd never had voice lessons to learn how to sing appropriately.
Okay.
So but I've since been doing a lot of stuff on YouTube. So like, I feel like that has been helpful, just watching like vocal coaches and like listening to them and trying different things and trying to find what feels the healthiest, I think is the best way to do it. Like wherever your vocal cords are going to vibrate, you know, like let them do it uninhibited by like your own brain trying to tell you what's pretty.
That's awesome. Well, you can really tell because on The Big Freeze, there's kind of like a breadth of your voice. Like you can hear, there's more space in it. You know, you can hear yourself so much more with the way you deliver it. So yeah, that's awesome. So what kind of records was your grandma on in the 30s?
Well, she sang with Benny Goodman. So she sang like big band music.
Awesome.
That's crazy.
She had a really beautiful voice. Beautiful. But then she you know, she did a advertisement for Lucky Strike, and then she got emphysema and she couldn't sing after that. Wow. So it's like real ironic tale. Is that irony?
It's kind of irony. It's
just, yeah. It's sardonic irony.
So was she a soloist or did she sing group? Like, what was her?
No, she was a soloist.
Wow.
So she's on, you can hear her for sure on the song This Year's Kisses. There's like smaller records that she sang on, but like a lot of the, like, the singles, he has like a bunch of different singers, but she sang with him for, I think, 3 years, and she's on the recording for This Year's Kisses. You can hear it on YouTube, Spotify. But yeah, she was pretty incredible. She was like really, really smart and also just really, really talented. So
did she tour or travel with the group at all?
Yeah, she did. She toured for a while, and then she met my grandfather. He was working at CBS because he was a composer. And then when they wanted to have kids, I think he was just like, no more touring.
Right, okay.
So then she quit, and she just became a piano teacher from their home. And then when they got a divorce, she went back to school and became a teacher. Like, she has like such a crazy story because she was just so bright also on top of being so talented. So
yeah. Seems she like she had work. A lot of drive too. Where was your family from?
She was from South Carolina.
Oh, really?
And my grandfather was the son of an Italian immigrant. He lived in Newark, New Jersey. So, but they both kind of like had a... They both kind of got discovered and, like, their lives got changed by being a part of music. So it was cool.
And just wound up around New York, like, since he was at CBS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome. So we have to take a little shift here for a segment called Mystery Friend.
Oh.
Okay. So this wasn't easy to get, by the way, because I was like, you know what? Laura has to hear about Jeff enough.
Oh, yeah.
That I'm not making Jeff the fucking mystery friend. Okay. He's a friend of the show already. He's on plenty. So
there's no mystery about him.
No mysteries. Yeah. At all.
We know all about that guy.
Yeah. Open book. So I've heard this story that you were driving, you're on tour.
Okay.
And apparently you were forced off the Trans-Canadian Highway on an overnight drive by an avalanche.
Yes.
And then got stranded in a place called Revelstoke, British Columbia. And then they reopened the highways and you apparently blew out a tire.
Yes.
During a blizzard. So can you tell me about these few days? That sounds wild.
It was really wild. Okay, so we played in Vancouver, and then we had a show in, what was the next city? It was far. It was an overnight drive.
I think based on the story, I heard it was Calgary.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So I don't even know how many hours that is. Yeah, it's really far, so we were just going to drive through the night. But it started snowing, and we were like, okay, this is not, like, awesome, but we're going to do it. It was April, which is avalanche season, because that's when, you know, everything starts warming up. They have a lot of heli-skiing that, like, kind of knocks the snow up, and that's like what happens. So I knew that I was gonna have to be the best shotgun in the world to Mike, because it was an overnight drive through the snow. So I drank 2 5-hour energies.
Okay. Yeah, because if people don't know, in that role, that is maybe even more of an important role than driver for an overnight drive. Like, you gotta be engaging. You got to be fun. You got to get directions. That's a very important job. Yeah.
You got to get the playlist going, or like stand up comedy, or whatever you're going to listen to. You got to like keep it fresh. You know?
Through and that 3 to 5 a.m. malaise.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's the hardest part. Yeah. Right before sun up.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part. So I was like, okay, I'm going to be awesome. And I bought 2 5-hour energies, and I was a fucking nightmare as a. The shotgun. I was having panic attacks because also the snow was coming down so hard. There was only one lane that was drivable.
Oh no.
All the exits were snowed over. So we were stuck on the road.
Shit.
And it looked like we were driving, because the snow was so high on both sides, because we were like in the mountains. it looked like we were driving through an actual tunnel of snow. Like, it looked like the snow was canopied over the top of the van. Like, that's how high, it's just white everywhere you looked. So it was really so fucking scary. And yeah. I was certain we were going to die.
Yeah.
There were just, like, trucks alongside the highway, like, just with their chains on, like, they were just like, okay, I'm done. Like, yeah, they couldn't exit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, we were really, really scared. Probably much more so than Mike. and AJJ and Roar, they were in a van. They were, taking videos of themselves going probably 10 miles an hour or less. They were out the side of the van, and like, I don't know what, it looked like they were like hoverboarding on the snow.
Oh my God.
While they were driving, probably not hoverboarding, maybe skateboarding. They were like, just like skitching, but like on top of the snow. Whoa. And they were having like a blast.
Yeah.
And we were not.
Bunch of Arizona kids. Not. They're like, yeah, snow. Exactly.
They were like, what is this? It's like sand, but cold. This is cold sand. And so then we finally got off, and it was because they closed down the highway completely. Wow. In this town called Revelstoke. And I kept saying it felt like Brigadoon because it didn't feel real. And everybody kind of had like a Scottish accent. They were like, oh, really? Welcome to Revelstoke. And we were like, what? Okay. This doesn't feel real. I thought we had like died.
So then the Scottish part of British Columbia.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then we were stuck there for over a day. Wow. Just sitting in like it was like an A&W or like some sort of restaurant like that, just with all the other truckers,
right,
just watching, yeah, the TV and just trying to find out when the roads were going to reopen.
Sure.
It was surreal, but it was nice.
That's wild. And yeah. then finally, when do you get back on the road? Like next day?
Two days? Next day. And they just moved the show. It was like, why didn't we just have the show be on the next day anyway? Like, they so easily moved the show. They're like, oh, okay, yeah.
I mean, to be about Vancouver to Calgary on an overnight, that's asking for trouble. I mean,
it was brutal.
That's fucking
It was
far.
Really, really brutal. So
yeah. You immediately get back on the road and then blew out a tire?
Oh, yeah. And we were in Banff
when
the tire blew. So it was a pretty place to
beautiful,
be stuck.
Sure.
And then AJJ caught up to us and saw us stranded, and they know that we're all just like such idiots because we're all like from like Long Island and whatever. Nobody knows how to change a tire. So they helped us. They like got under there, jacked up the van, and changed the tire for us because we're just like, none of our cell phones work. Like, what do we do? And we're just standing there, and then they just happened to drive past us, idiots, and they saved the day. So it was really nice.
AJJ is really coming through in this story as quite
they
the adventurous
really
group. Yeah,
they like, really are. So are they my secret friends?
Well, yeah. Now that I got the story, you have to guess which mystery friend told me this story. That's the game.
Sean?
No.
Deacon?
No.
Preston?
No.
Ben?
No, none of them.
Owen?
None of them.
Wait, who else was on the tour?
You're missing one crucial part.
Sean. Ben. Oh, Mark!
No. All right, I have to end this. It was your husband.
Oh.
I went ahead and got a mystery husband instead of a mystery friend today.
Oh, I love
it. Well, I'll tell you why. It's because our mutual friend, John Demon and the Chichi.
Ah, yes.
I call him last night and he's like, yeah, I'll get something. And then hits me back. He's like, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I don't have anything.
Oh, my
God. Seriously, no story for me. And then he subsequently tweets like 15 fucking times after. I'm like, you couldn't have thought of something in the time you constructed all these tweets with the
he's
cool emojis.
He's working on his tweets. You know, he's working on his tweets.
But then he called me this morning and he did give me a funny story. It's not a great mystery friend, but I still want you to talk about it.
Okay.
So apparently when he was your drummer.
Yes.
You were having issues with the monitors and would like kind of glare back at the band every once in a while. And they were really afraid that they were doing something wrong. But it turned out that you were just mad at the monitor people, so then you guys came up with a safe word.
Oh,
I think it was banana.
Yes.
To be like, it's the monitor people, it's not you, so they wouldn't be self-conscious. This actually happened?
Yes. Yeah, because, like, I was trying to be like, is this happening for you guys? You know, like, with my eyes, you know, like, just, like, kind of being like, because nothing was coming out of my monitor, and I was like, trying to gauge this scenario.
Right.
But yeah, they all thought that I was like angry at somebody, and I was like, no, I'm not angry at anybody. I'm just like upset because I can't hear myself and I'm scared that I'm singing the wrong notes and it sounds like shit. But yeah, so they had to say banana. But then since then I've gotten an in-ear monitor. So okay. I don't think that's happened since, but yeah, it made me feel scared that like they are just afraid that I'm mad all the time.
Yeah. He also said that you came up with the word banana, but then you'd always forget the word and yell things not at all banana related, and it would confuse them. He told me that.
Yeah, too. I couldn't remember the word. I knew syllabically, you know, like what fit in there, but I couldn't figure it out. So I was like, Johanna? And now my daughter's name is Johanna. So it works
That's
out.
That's awesome. Oh, so you didn't name your daughter Margaret?
No, her middle name is Mairead, which is Irish Margaret. Gotcha. But her first name is Johanna.
Hey, did you use the traditional spelling of Mairead? Isn't it really weird spelling?
It's M-A-I-R-E with an accent A-D. That was the one that we went with. There's like with two accents, and then there's one with an E on the end. But I liked visually the one that we picked.
That's pretty close to like an Elon Musk name. That's
oh, old. Yeah, like A07.
Yeah, that little cyborg that he has, apparently.
Do you think that they were kidding? Because if they were kidding, that's fucking hilarious. But if they were serious,
I don't think that guy's kidding. Yeah, I don't think that guy's kidding. Yeah, it's kind of his thing. I follow that guy way closer than I should because I went ahead and bought some Tesla stock like years and years and years ago. And I don't really know much about stocks at all. You know, I'm kind of like, oh, this guy says he's going to take people to the moon. That's probably going to do well. You know, that's kind of my logic in going through this. But he was such a confusing figure to like, to follow, because the whole time I'm like, is this guy Nikolai Tesla? Is he Howard Hughes? Like, what is he? I don't know if he's like a snake oil salesman or a genius. You know, I kind of still don't. Yeah, I kind of still don't. He's a very strange character. John's story was really funny, though, because that used to happen in Gaslight Anthem a lot. But 50% of the time, I was actually being glared at for playing too fast. Because I get excited.
Yeah, know? I mean, that's the live atmosphere.
When we played together, did I play too fast?
No.
No?
I'm in Antarctica? Have you ever played with me as a person?
No, not you as a solo. I would love to.
I was like, wait, you're have wonderful. We played together? Oh, thank
and then
you.
I could
that
break out
fun.
My mallets and brushes.
Ooh,
and cool
la
stuff
la.
And get all broody.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
No, you always played great. I loved the energy. I loved playing in Antarctica.
Ah, it's so much fun. We'll do it again soon.
Once, wonderful. Yeah.
Once the world unpeels. Exists. Yeah. So I wanted to, on the Big Freeze, you've always incorporated strings, but it seemed like even more on this last record. And I read you came upon a wonderful cellist.
Oh, yeah.
And then I also watched your Tiny Desk concert, which was great. And I was wondering how you're incorporating those musicians. Are you just giving them the songs and letting them write parts, or are you actually like composing parts for the string players?
Well, I would like sing the parts. When we were recording cello for Big Freeze, I would sing. We had this cello player named Eleanor Norton, and so like I could sing over the talkback the parts, and then she would just play them exactly as I sang them.
Oh wow!
With That's every cool. inflection, every like dramatic lilt, you know, she played it like it was a voice. It was really beautiful. She's just super in tune with her instrument. And then when I did the Tiny Desk, I sent the main cellist, I sent her the, like, three GarageBand tracks. So I, like, made I like did the arrangement over GarageBand, and then she told me like what would work within the ranges of each instrument, and she like tweaked some of the notes or like maybe like did things an octave up if it wasn't like within like a comfortable range for the instrument.
Okay.
Or like intonation wise, like if it was like a difficult key, you know, uh-huh. we would like change a note. And yeah, she just kind of guided me in terms of like just arranging for a three piece, you know, and also like for like what notes live would rub too much together, you know.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then she charted everything,
cool.
gave it to the string players. So they had sheet music, and then we just practiced for like an hour before the performance.
Wow.
And it was really scary, but it was awesome. It was really, really cool.
It's wild running into sometimes in our world, right? Where you run into people, you're like, oh my God, you're such a real musician.
Right.
You're yeah. terrifying.
Yeah. Like yeah. I was like, cause we had to change something. We had to change like a beat on the song Dermatillomania
yeah.
because it was like just like the time signature was a little bit different, and so when I was giving them the note, they took out pens and changed it on their sheet music.
Right,
I was like,
right.
oh, because they're just reading the music.
Yeah,
cause they're like real people.
right. And I'm like, yo, play that back to me like three times so I
yeah.
can make sure my ear recognizes it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, you got it. You know,
yeah.
like they would just like write it down, and then it was like, okay, got it.
That's awesome.
Which is crazy. But also like Kevin Higuchi also
yeah.
plays drums like that. He charts everything out. So when like
Does
I did
really?
A tour. Yeah, I did a tour with him. And he just would like make a note, and then he'd be like, okay, cool. And he's just got it. Cause he's
wow.
just charts it, and he's reading his chart, and it's like, what? And then it just is fine.
Wow. That's cool.
but yeah, it's just like, it's such a different world for me. But yeah, it's cool.
That's awesome. And then you and, I know I said I wasn't gonna bring him up. You and your buddy made a Neil Young record.
Oh, yes, my buddy Jeffrey.
Yeah, yeah. and so, I mean, I know that was pretty well documented when it came out, but I thought it was cool. Did I read that your dad was, like, a hardcore Neil Young fan who, like, buys bootlegs and it's, like, part
oh, yeah.
of his fan club and, like, stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. My dad is probably, like, the world's biggest Neil Young fan.
Wow.
That's, like, why he has a computer, I feel like. He just is always, like, on the message boards, like, exchanging bootlegs with people. And it's just, like, he's so in it. That's his number one guy.
Is there a name for him? Because my mom was in the Queen fan club.
Is there a name for
and
the
she was
Neil
called,
Young
they
fans?
Were called Queenies.
Oh, maybe they're called, like, the youngins or something?
The youngins,
know.
Yeah.
that would be cute.
so did you seek his advisement at all when you made this record? Like, which songs would you
oh,
want to hear me doing?
No.
No, not at all.
I would be too afraid. But okay. I was afraid for him to even hear it, because
right.
I was like, oh, God, is he going to hate this? But he liked it. So
okay.
that makes me happy. That makes me
really
happy. Did
he share with the other Neil Young nerds on, like, the message boards?
Oh, I don't know. Probably
like,
not.
Be like, guys, like, don't kill me for this.
they probably would kill him. They'd be like, this is blasphemous to our god, Neil.
Oh, poor Neil. And now he's being played at Trump rallies, you know?
Oh, God.
I wonder how he feels about that. Last time I saw him, he was eating and handing out a bowl of organic cherries
what?
At the front
Where?
Of the stage. It was at a festival.
Aww.
And I was like, man, this is just the sweetest old man.
I love
and
him.
And then I heard that song and I'm like, that must have put Neil in like his hyperbolic chamber for like 2 days being
yeah.
sad once he heard that. Because he seems like such a sensitive guy, you know?
It's so crazy. Were they playing Keep On Rockin' in the Free World?
When he was handing out the cherries?
Oh, no. Is that the song that they used at the Trump rally?
Probably. I would imagine.
Yeah. They just used a Tom Petty song.
I know. Don't back down.
Oh God.
Yeah.
So crazy.
So now apparently a bunch of Tom Petty fans have to come to grips with the fact that Tom Petty was not a conservative, nor was his family. So I saw the Twitter thread. It was ugly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
People were like, oh, man, Tom's not one of us. It's like, fucking, no, Tom is fucking cool.
He's from Gainesville.
Yeah,
he's Gainesville is like shitty a cool, like me.
Yeah. Cool blue dot.
Yeah. this isn't hot water music, kids, you know?
Yeah.
So, going back, for me, it was like the 90s. You know, I had always imagined, like, that going to punk and hardcore shows was sort of like an all-inclusive environment. And now I sort of realize in hindsight, you know, that it was a very male, white-dominated place.
Yeah.
That, you know, wasn't nearly as inclusive as I thought. Even though it was philosophically inclusive, it wasn't actually physically inclusive.
Right.
And, you know, I can imagine you've had the experience of being the only woman in the room quite a few times through all your years in music. I'm curious, like, how your experiences back in the day were compared to now, and if you think there's been any, like, marked improvement in you know, inclusivity in music and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like people are maybe becoming more aware of it. I don't know if it still feels like a very inclusive environment. It still feels very white cis, you know, yeah, like,
sure.
So I would say that you're seeing maybe some changes, but not nearly as many as should have been, you know, made at where we are now,
right,
you know? So I think there's still so much work to be done. So yeah, I don't know. But I mean, like, yeah, yeah. It was very like just kind of a white boy club for a really long time and still feels very much that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd say.
So hasn't gotten much better since then.
I don't think so. I think that now, like, there's conversations, and I think that that's a good thing.
Sure.
But hopefully we'll see the conversations leading to actual change, and you hear more voices than just the one, you know?
And what do you think is, like, you know, something that, you know, a band of four or five straight white males, you know, beyond like hiring practices and stuff, you know, what do you think some stuff that maybe bands on the other side could do to make it more inclusive or to actually take like a real step in that direction?
I think opening up your life, I think like a lot of it also has to do with just like socially, people are kind of like isolated into these like, you know, like groups, you know what I mean?
Right,
and I feel like it goes so much beyond music, but to like actually culturally, people just, you know, like being less isolated culturally, I think,
right,
would lead to actual changes.
So know? Even just opening yourself up to different stories, different lives.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Okay. That makes sense. Love it. Well, you don't have to speak for all women. I won't do that to you. I was curious, since you came up in that scene, this is a fun little game. Who was your favorite band in 1998, in 2008, and now?
Oh, my God.
Or artist. Band or artist.
1998.
Because what were you in 98? Like, you were a little
kid. I was 14.
Yeah, okay, perfect.
Okay, so 14, my math 1998. Was right. Did probably less than Jake.
Okay. Oh, so the being in Bomb the Music Industry, that wasn't an accident. You were a proper like ska punk kid.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Oh yeah. I was less ska, more like ska punk.
Okay.
I would say. But yeah, probably.
So what are we talking? Less than Jake, Real Big Fish.
Less Real Big Fish. I didn't have any of their CDs.
Okay.
But I liked Blink 182.
Sure.
Of course. I mean, that's not ska punk. That's just like,
that's a given.
Yeah. Blink 182, probably. I mean, Dude Ranch was like that was a game changer for me. And then Enema came out and I was like, what? And I listened to that for like an entire year. So probably those two bands were my favorite bands, okay. Which is, you know, fine. It is what it is.
That's good for 98. Yeah.
2008, I was, how old would I be then? 24. My favorite band then, 24 years old. I was listening to a lot of singer-songwriters when I was 24. So probably like Elliot Smith or like Leonard Cohen. I was going through my like sensitive phase.
Phase. Starting to get broody.
Yeah. And then like now.
Yeah.
What do I even listen to? Podcasts. Right. Yeah.
People talking about pandemics. That's my favorite artist.
That's
right
like
now.
Pretty much, I listen to like Comedy Bang Bang and like, yeah, I just like don't even listen to music anymore. So how's that for an evolution?
That's a good evolution. It's a little scary how similar it is to mine. I mean, I have that issue sometimes where I'm like, why do I feel so terrible right now? And then I like go out on a dog walk and just like play a record I love. And I'm like, oh my God, I feel better. Why do I forget to listen to music?
I know. It's like music is so like nurturing and it's like, it's not my first go-to thing to make me feel better anymore.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like almost like someone who's been there so long that I take her for granted.
I know. You forget. We've been listening to a lot of Bill Evans in the house and that's been really, really nice because it's relaxing and like still like complex, you know? So it's like your brain is being stimulated, but like in a way that is like very in the background. So it's, that's kind of been like the baby playlist. It's just been like a lot of Blevins, I like to call him.
And I'd imagine Mike is probably up on like super like cool up to date stuff, right?
I think less up to date and more like he's going back in time. So like now, like he's going through like a heavy jazz phase. And then I think that's why Blevins has made it. and then he was like, he was getting into like really obscure disco records. So he like every week it's like a new kind of phase that he's going through. And then we'll just have like so many records on our doorstep that like he's ordered at like 2 a.m.
What is obscure disco?
Like random things that I've never heard of. just like weird shit, like weird collectors. I'm also breastfeeding as
you can hear it. I'm burping her.
I've been doing that for like 20 minutes.
Yes.
Nice.
Good for you. That was smooth.
I didn't think I'd be able to. I thought that she'd get mad, but she's doing good.
Young mother.
Yeah. Look
You're
at me.
You're pulling it off.
My young 36-year-old mother.
Oh, it's perfect. I love it.
But yeah, so it's just like random ass things that he like reads about and like these message boards that are like very, very limited pressing records that he will buy. And then they're awesome. And it's wonderful.
I got to look into that because I think I think since having kids and like I've got a new respect for like a lot of like 70s disco, some of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
There's this artist named Sylvester that we got the record the other day and it's fucking great. And one of the tracks was written by a member of the band Lavender Country, which is like this really cool queer country group from the 70s in New York City that I also just found out about from a drag performer named Trixie Mattel that I follow on Instagram. So like I'm learning about music in just like every way possible.
Yeah. Wherever right you can find it.
Just very, very different places like Instagram.
I feel like it's easy to hate on disco, but then if you pay attention, you've literally seen the rhythm and the beat of disco being recreated like every year since disco has been a thing.
Absolutely. You know? And it's just such utterly listenable, joyful music, you know?
It's
special. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, there's still some horrible, horrible disco.
Yeah.
But it even,
there's horrible everything, though, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's
I feel
funny,
like
though.
There may be a little bit higher ratio of disco, and that's why it's always gotten such a bad rap.
Yeah.
Right,
I feel like
right.
At some point in its early inception, it was okay to make shitty disco because it was such a utility music, you know, like it was for dancing.
Just for the dance floor.
And that really, like, that's why, you know, it's never gotten over its bad rap. But yeah, the good shit is fucking, some of it's just stunningly amazing.
Yeah.
And it got to everyone. That's the thing. It's like the disco period ended. And then, you know, Led Zeppelin has like In Through the Outdoor.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were clearly listening to disco when they made that record. Like I'm like, John Bonham doesn't play like that. Why is he doing the oots? Like that's not his vibe. It got to everyone. Well, everyone
there
was infected
boots
by
and
disco.
Cats everywhere.
Yeah, there's those classic like early 80s like Kiss, Kiss and the Stones, a Rolling Stones.
Stones too, yeah.
Uh-huh. Busted out disco songs, yeah.
Yep, everyone tried.
Yeah.
I think that's you need some of these. You need to...
Oh, yeah.
I think you need a trap rap. Isn't that what it's called?
Oh, what's trap?
You got to find somebody like a... You need to find like a 19-year-old kid with a lot of face tattoos to do a collab with.
Yeah. Okay.
Or just some remixes, right?
Yeah, some remixes. Like
I would love it. If I ever meet another person, I would love to collaborate.
Yeah, I don't know if you're running into that guy up in Hudson Valley too.
Yeah.
I think you lost that demographic. So
I think I've just lost the access to any other human being other than my husband and daughter.
It'll
the
come.
Rest of my
it'll
life.
Come. Just stay steadfast. We'll be
yeah,
all
we
right.
tell her when she's 25, she'll meet some people.
Yeah. No, dude, taking my kids out. Putting them in masks and telling them not to like touch other kids.
It's, oh my God, that must be so strange.
It's sad. It's fucking sad. It's weird. So as I mentioned, you're living up in upstate New York now, Hudson Valley. I was driving around your house the other day.
Oh yes,
in a way.
That's very
exciting. Checking some properties out.
I love it.
So there are a lot of old creepy houses up there, and I know you've recorded in some houses. Mm-hmm. Do you believe in ghosts?
Do I? If I say no, will the prospective ghosts come and get me?
Well, if you say no, I think you just answered my question in the fact that you think prospective ghosts will come after you if you answer incorrectly.
Well, I'm open to it.
Okay.
I'm open to being afraid of anything. So I think yes. In a way, but also like I've never experienced it, but if I say no, then I'm scared that will make ghosts want to come after me. So
you don't wanna tempt,
yes.
You don't want to, I get it.
I don't want to tempt their ghostly revenge, spectral revenge.
I think you may need to leave a tribute out now.
Yeah,
some
I know.
Chocolates and a couple
not
pennies.
Not my firstborn.
No, not.
Protect the child.
It's not Ghostbusters 2. Oscar! I'll never understand how such a good actress and Sigourney Weaver can deliver that Oscar line so strangely. You're literally watching a phantom. Your kid is on top of like a 25th floor building walking on the ledge and gets picked up by a ghost with a baby carriage. And she just goes to Oscar. And that's it. And then calls Bill Murray. You know?
Well, who are you going to call?
Well, yeah, true. Ernie Hudson, please.
Yeah.
I like the one who takes it seriously.
The best of the best.
Yeah. Winston. All right. Well, we've been on for a while. What do we got here?
Oh,
hour 20 minutes.
Yeah,
and you've been breastfeeding.
Yeah. We've really been through it.
Laura, ups and downs. This was a roller coaster.
Yeah.
It was great.
Well, thank you for having me.
No, thanks for doing this. This was fun.
Of course. Can't wait to be neighbors.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't find anything.
I know. Come back up. You can move into our house. It's a 2-bedroom. You'll love it.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I'm so happy you guys are doing well, considering.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you guys are doing good, too.
And, when things get halfway normal, maybe I'll see you.
Yes, please. I'd love
it. Cool. All right. Thanks again, Laura.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Well, that was fun.
Oh, yeah. As you knew it would be.
Yeah, she's great. I knew she was self-conscious about talking so much about babies and breast milk, but, like, it's what's going on. And we really need to normalize breastfeeding. I learned through my wife's experience how many people are still, like, give you fucking dirty looks for doing it at, like, a park or, like, some. And, you know, going through this process, I'm like, is there anything in the world that could be more natural than that?
Right.
Like the thing that you just you know, like, come the fuck on. It's literally a baby getting the food to survive, yeah. And you somehow deem it lewd. Like, yeah. It's insanity.
Now, you want to see God, this is the closest you get. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, so 100%, man.
It's perverse. It's only in this fucking country. I mean, I'm sure that there's, like, you know, third world countries that are got issues with everything, but...
Yeah. I mean, I'm not willing to speak on that. I know in France it's probably better.
But I mean, you know, you can show a person putting a gun in their mouth on TV here in the States, but you can't show a woman breastfeeding.
I know.
Just look at that objectively. If you can, like, look at it like an alien from another planet, it just is so fucked up.
Or I could watch somebody, like, mow down 100 human lives, but I can't listen to you say shit. You know? Like, and shit is another biological thing that we shouldn't be so ashamed of. Like, what are you going to do? You know, people are crazy.
Everybody does it.
You know, what's scaring me a little, Brad, is I smell a cigarette right now, but my house is totally closed up.
That's weird.
So
I've had that experience before.
This might be the last time you speak to me.
You got a brain tumor?
No, it's cigarette. There's a cigarette man in my house waiting for me.
Oh, jeez. Well, maybe you should leave.
Oh, wait. Your head went to brain tumor? Mine went to somebody in my house smoking a cigarette. Oh, how does smelling a cigarette mean you have a brain tumor?
No,
is that a thing?
There's something if you have a tumor that you have, you smell odd smells. I don't know if it's specifically cigarette or if it's a specific smell, but that's part of it.
The cigarette thing I don't mind as much because I used to smoke and sometimes I even smell it. I'm like... and I kind of, you know, almost want one.
Yeah.
You know what gets me is charcoal briquettes on a grill. Like if someone's grilling with charcoal and that's going into my house, I have a flashback. I used to live in this apartment complex with my mom and there was a guy, White Trash Jimmy. And White Trash Jimmy had a van that he converted to have this crazy sound system in. And he used to make me go into it and listen to Rush records. Like, this is real. Jimmy was a real piece of work.
Sounds like my childhood, dude.
I know. Listen, there's a lot of similarities between a white trash apartment complex in Jersey and whatever country
middle
bumpkin living you grew up in. Yeah. And then, and Jimmy, though, you know, he lived literally one apartment over from us on the same floor and used to just go out in the weekends with this little circular charcoal grill. I don't even think he was cooking half the time, but the smoke just right into my house all day long. And I was a little freaked out about Jimmy, so I couldn't say anything, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Where's Jimmy now?
Oh, my God. He got kicked out. So... one night, we hadn't seen Jimmy for a couple weeks. He actually wasn't supposed to live there. It was a low-income housing unit. And, you know, there are 1, 2, 3-bedroom places. And you weren't supposed to have more humans in there than you needed.
Right.
So if you had the one apartment, there was only supposed to be one person there.
Right.
So it was actually Jimmy's girlfriend who owned the place. And Jimmy was just kind of squatting it, you know? And we hadn't seen him for a couple weeks and middle of the night, the whole apartment like starts waking up because Jimmy is drunk as fuck, pounding on his girlfriend's door, going crazy, pulling some classic white trash shit. And me at that time, I had already had some problems with him and I was feeling, like I needed to like defend like my mom and stuff. So I grab a golf club and start walking out the front door to, like, confront drunk Jimmy. And
not a good idea.
Not a fucking – in hindsight, I'm like, oh, my God, dude. And luckily for me, my upstairs neighbor, very nice guy named Joe Lella, is a HVAC guy. He repaired air conditioning and had a couple kids, stand-up dude. He's walking down at the same time, just grabs me by the shirt. And just doesn't say anything, just went, nope. Just shook his head, no. Basically, like, just tossed me back into my apartment. And he went and handled Jimmy. And then literally disappeared from my life. Never seen the guy again. So that's what happened to White Trash Jimmy. I don't know how he wound up. But good thing I didn't go out there with that golf club. That could have gotten ugly for me.
Could have really gotten bad.
And I wasn't tough. I was very chubby. You know, I was just trying to take care of business, so yeah, you know?
It wasn't a good way out of that one, Benny.
No, yeah.
One of you was going to die.
You're not thinking straight in that situation, you know? I was little. I shouldn't have been making those decisions.
Good for you for being a man and standing up for your mom.
But at least Joe is around. Respect to Joe Lella. Good guy.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, good. Appreciate that. So where were we even going with this?
I don't know.
So I interviewed Laura and then started talking about White Trash Jimmy. I guess that's how it goes. Going off track, right?
She obviously, I mean, for our longtime fans, they know that she's kind of part of the family. She's done five episodes. And I would say go back and do a search and listen to the old episodes that she did with us because they're all really good.
She's always great.
And
she's on that live episode 300, right? She's the first interview before Brian Baker and Blake.
And we have her, you know, we have an episode of her solo. I feel like she might have done an earlier live episode, too.
Yeah, I think so, too.
They're all good.
And that's why I didn't bring up. She has a really fascinating story with her grandparents and their, you know, connection to the music industry and stuff. But I remember asking about it quite a bit in that episode 300. Right. So I didn't want to get too into it here. So it would be good to revisit. But Laura's awesome. Definitely check out The Big Freeze. That record is amazing. And the split with Jeff doing Neil Young songs is also fun.
I got to check that out. I don't even know about that one.
Yeah, it's cool.
That sounds great.
It's just a nice, fun project. Yeah, and she is at just Laura Stevenson on Twitter, Laura Stevenson on Instagram. And yeah, go buy her records and go see her because she's awesome. Do we have any? Are we going to hawk ourselves now?
Still get the Patreon. Go patreon.com/goingofftrack. I'm not going to say anymore. Check it out. If you want to throw us some bucks, if you want to become a part of the club, the Going Off Track Army or whatever you want to call it.
Oh,
but
you need a cool catchphrase, Brad.
And we're at Venmo at Off Track. If you want to throw us a tip. And thanks to everybody who has, we get new fans every week, so that's great. And it'll be used. I'm going to get Benny a new mic. Don't worry.
Yeah. Brad keeps complaining about the fact that I'm wearing earbuds and recording into my little Tascam here.
I'm going to get you one of those headset mics like the announcers use on football.
Oh, so I could be like a backup dancer in a Janet Jackson Rhythmation video. Yeah.
That's all I get to say. How about you?
Yeah, that's great. I love everybody. Thanks for listening. Take care of each other out there. Buy Laura's music. And we'll see you for the next one.
See you next week. Woo!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.